Welcome to Better Sex, where you get the information and inspiration to create and enjoy your best possible sex life. Join your host, sex therapist Jessa Zimmerman, as she brings you expert guests, helpful tips, knowledge, and strategies to improve your intimate relationships. And now, your host, Jessa Zimmerman.
Hey, welcome back. It's another episode of the Better Sex Podcast. This is Jessa welcoming you, thanking you for spending time with me. So glad you are tuning in. Today's episode, I'm talking to Christian Holmes, and she is a therapist in Florida who's talking about the intersection of race, oppression, privilege, and mental health. And so our conversation revolves around both some of the things that people of color are up against with mental health and in trying to seek help, and then some of the things all of us therapists need to be thinking about and aware of in order to make this a healing journey and a supportive journey for our clients. So I hope you find the conversation interesting and helpful and get a lot out of it. And before we start the show today, it is sponsored by Intimacy with Ease. It's a method to help otherwise happy couples achieve a sex life that is easy and fun for both of them so that you can actually just enjoy your sex life with zero stress. For more information, if you want to watch a brief little training video that's available, all of that, go to intimacywithease.com. So Christian, thank you so much for joining me on the show.
Thank you for having me here, Jessa.
So let's just dive right in, right? So how are sexual health and racism related, or how does racism impact people's sexual health? It seems like that's a big topic. Like, there's probably lots of different questions in there. So
yes, there definitely is. So, you know, with sexual health, that involves our physical, mental, emotional, and social well-being. And racism is the oppression of a racial group for the advantage of another group. And so with that systemic racism, that's kind of inherent in a lot of like the medical practices where clinics are located, provider bias. And so when trying to seek care for sexual health or anything sexual, those kind of things are already part of the system. And it kind of makes it difficult for people of color to get quality care.
I mean, I'm imagining there are other ways that just systemic racism is impacting people's well-being even before they go in to seek care, right? Like this is having an impact on, I would guess, people's well-being and functioning and maybe access to knowledge. I don't know.
Right. I mean, just on a day-to-day basis, racism affects people of color, just in terms of going to work, just in terms of going to school, just anything that you can think of, even just daily errands. You're going to the grocery store. So before you even make it to even like schedule an appointment, all those things have already kind of have happened for people of color. And so that kind of goes in terms when they're going into certain spaces, like how is someone going to respond to me? How is someone going to interact with me? If I was a person who's white, would they have given me better care? Or even, like I said, at the grocery store, anything, just the little day-to-day thing.
Yeah. And I'm, again, imagining that that load of stress must be constant, probably has some impact on people's relationships. I mean, maybe not. Maybe when, you know, some people, when they get home and, you know, close the door, they can shut that out. But I'm imagining people are starting a little bit of an uphill battle, right? And having the energy or the bandwidth or whatever to really connect with a partner or to deal with their sex life.
Right. Most definitely. I mean, just in general, when we come home from work, some of us want to, you know, vent with our partner, just, oh my God, I can't believe this happened. And then when you add in racial microaggressions and things like that, that definitely takes a toll. And it's just sometimes you're just not in the mood. You've dealt with all this stress on top of just regular work-related stress. Then you add in, you know, race or even sometimes gender, sexuality, all those things play a role. And it's not as easy as just leaving work at work.
Yeah. I guess there's sort of two different maybe there's more than two, but there's sort of like the therapy world that people might go to for help with their sexual functioning, sexual relationships, sexual health. And then there's the medical profession. You know, I don't know if the advice you have or the issues are the same on both of those, but you know, how do you advise people of color to have some agency and to seek out help that's going to be responsive?
Well, in some ways it is similar for the medical and the therapy world, just in terms of just asking questions. So that's just definitely number one in terms of taking control and taking agency, like asking those questions that are important to you in terms of what you're seeking in a doctor, what you're seeking in a therapist. Also being transparent and open with other people and asking them, like, who did you go to for this particular issue? Or who did you see when you were struggling with this? I think communication is definitely the key to that. And just seeking education and community amongst people who are struggling or dealing with similar issues, regardless if it's in the medical field or therapy.
Mm-hmm. What do you advise people do if they're in the middle of an appointment, you know, with a therapist or a doctor, and they're not getting the respect or the sensitivity or the awareness that they need? You know, what kind of agency can somebody take, like, right there to advocate for themselves?
Well, if you're feeling comfortable enough, definitely addressing it head on and just expressing, you know, what your concern is. Like, hey, I don't think you're really listening to me and what I'm struggling with here. I'm telling you that these are my symptoms. It feels as if maybe you're being dismissive. But I can also understand that sometimes that's difficult to do. I know I've been in situations where in my head I'm saying all these things. But the reality is I'm just sitting there looking at the person like, So I definitely understand, you know, the difficulty in just being able to advocate for yourself sometimes.
Yeah, because I imagine you're risking, you know, defensiveness, more microaggressions. You know, it's like digging a deeper hole, potentially.
Correct. Yes. And I think that's also a fear at times, because if you've been in situations where maybe you have spoke up for yourself, something has maybe occurred, whatever the negative reaction to that may have been. And it could just be a comment. It could be something worse in terms of losing an opportunity. You just don't ever know. So it's that balance of, do I say something or do I not say something?
Are there particular issues you think that Black women are up against in terms of sexual health, you know, that are maybe more common struggles or things that are on their mind maybe more than other populations?
Oh, yes, most definitely. Just research in general shows that we have higher rates of STIs, HIV, the Black maternal mortality rate, 3 times higher than our white counterparts. Just those kind of things in general. Once again, that's also rooted in racism and systemic oppression and everything like that. And then you add in just cultural beliefs, distrust of the medical field, religious beliefs, you know, all those different things intersect with one another that just makes it a lot more difficult as a Black woman or just in general, a person of color.
Hi, it's Jessa here, taking just a quick break. Thanks for listening so far. I wanted to let you know about the sex quiz that I've put together called How Healthy Is Your Sex Life? I've taken a close look at the typical ways that I see couples get into trouble with sex, including avoidance, neglect, negativity, distraction, and boredom. And the free quiz will score your individual results based on these factors. And then I provide my recommendations and ideas, including my top 10 sex tips, which will help you make instant improvement. If you'd like to take the quiz and see how healthy your sex life is, you can do it right now at sexhealthquiz.com. So how can therapists create a safer space, I guess white or not, you know, but maybe particularly, you know, white people with Black clients?
Well, I think first and foremost, when it just comes to the topic of sex, therapists just need to be open about it. And that starts off with the intake. So when you are doing the intake assessment, you're giving that to any client, just having questions about sex on there or stating something like, do you have any concerns that you would like to address with me in regards to sexual health, and maybe having a checklist. So that already is opening up the conversation to anybody in terms of, this is someone who I can, you know, speak to about any sexual concerns I may have or sexuality issues. And then from there, it's just making sure you continue to bring that up during the therapy session. So if your client is speaking of depression, just how does the depression affect, you know, your sex life? And then when it comes to someone who is a Black person or a person of color, just making sure that you're aware of your own inherent biases or stereotypes, along with possibly, you know, just educating yourself, validating that person and their experiences. So even though it's not your experience, it doesn't mean that that didn't happen to them. And then, of course, if you're still struggling, just seek supervision or consultation.
You mentioned stereotypes. Are there specific ones that you might want to mention and sort of take apart, dismantle?
Oh, wow. There's many. You know, there's the angry Black woman, which is a very common one. It's the mammy stereotype, just the older Black woman who all she does is care for everyone and she's not necessarily a sexual being. There's also even just the stereotype of the welfare queen. When people speak about welfare, many times it's a Black woman that comes to mind who's had many different children, can't hold a job, is uneducated. So there's many different stereotypes that unfortunately people tend to believe about Black women.
Yeah. Are there some that are specifically sexual in nature? I mean, you mentioned the older Black woman, not thinking about them as a sexual being. Are there some others that might be showing up for somebody that's looking for services around sexual health?
So one of the stereotypes is definitely the Jezebel stereotype. And that's on the opposite end of the spectrum of the mammy, where that person is just a sexual person. They just can't help themselves. They're just kind of just flaunting their sexuality everywhere. And that they're just meant to be looked at as a sexual person for the benefit of someone else. Hmm.
What are some of the safe spaces that Black people can go to explore their sexuality or some of the issues they might be having?
So there is a group called Lovers and Friends. And so that's a combination where queer people and intersectionality kind of combine together. So that's a safe space. There's another one called meetafterhours.com, which was created by a Black woman who identifies as poly. There's also Black Women for Wellness. There's the Black Women's Health Initiative or Imperative. I'm sorry, I can't remember which one. So those are just places to just get some education and also just explore your sexuality in a safe space.
When should somebody maybe not see people of color? Like, how does somebody recognize that their own racism is in the way, their own blind spots are in the way?
That's a good question. And being that it is a blind spot, many times you don't know.
Right, right.
And at that point in time, I mean, I think as therapists, part of our job is always self-reflecting and always asking ourselves, who are we comfortable working with? What issues are we comfortable helping someone with? And if it just tends to happen that maybe you're looking at this person in a certain way, certain ideas are coming to mind, then really taking that time to really challenge yourself, like, where is this coming from? Why am I making these assumptions? Is this happening in other aspects of my life or with a certain group or a certain, you know, diagnosis, whatever the case may be? And then, like I said, going back and really seeking that consultation and that supervision and educating yourself outside of the office.
Are there, I don't know, the top 10 microaggressions that therapists might, what's the word, commit? You know, I'm just wondering about the tendencies to dismiss somebody's experience or to say, oh, you took that wrong. Or, you know, I thought, you know, maybe if you could list some of those out, people might recognize like, oh, maybe I do that.
Not necessarily, I'm going to say specifically in therapy. I think just in life in general, there are certain microaggressions such as you speak very articulate. You seem well-educated. Oh, I didn't know that, you know, there were people in that field. Things like that, that tend to kind of lead to, why wouldn't I sound educated? Or why would, you know, different things like that. It's kind of like, where is that coming from that you're making this assumption?
Mm-hmm. I could see that show up, you know, in therapy too, or even in a physician's office or something, right?
Yes.
And then I can imagine that, you know, oh, you must have heard that wrong, or you're taking offense where you didn't need to, or being dismissive of, you know, someone's experience.
Right. Or even, oh, I didn't mean to say it like that, or I'm not racist, those kind of things. And sometimes it's just acknowledge it and just kind of apologize and, you know, really take that moment to reflect versus putting it back on that other person.
How might therapists make it really clear that they're at least trying to offer a safe space to people of color?
That's a good question. I would say, more so in terms of the trainings that you're attending, if you're someone who's on social media, what are you posting, and just really showing that Black lives matter, Black mental health matters, even as simple as something as your website. If I'm going on your website, what are the images that I'm seeing? It's the same thing with the LGBTQ plus community. You know, if I'm going on your website, what are the images that I'm seeing? And those are just small things to let someone know that this is a safe space.
So what might help Black women reach out for care if they've been hesitant for so many good reasons, based on past experience, based on the systemic racism we know is in the culture?
Going back to that communication piece, I think is very helpful with Black women just speaking to other Black women, because representation really matters. So if I, as a Black therapist, am, you know, speaking to other Black therapists, speaking to just people in the community and just kind of encouraging mental health and having that conversation and really just trying to destigmatize mental health in general and those concerns that we have, that would definitely go a long way, along with just spaces that Black people tend to frequent. So religion is a big thing in the Black community. So churches being more open to mental health and therapy and sexual health. So it really just comes down to just having communication and being open with one another about what our struggles are and hopefully not being judgmental, so that it's like, oh, well, my friend went to so-and-so and oh, I'm struggling with stress and that's not good. So what can I do to help myself?
Yeah, it does seem like if people are able to have those conversations in their communities and know they're not alone and know that these struggles are common and they go in with a certain amount of empowerment than seeking help, which maybe would be very different than going in thinking, oh, I'm broken because I'm having pain with sex, or, you know,
right,
going in a fear-based thing, you'd probably be less likely to get the help that you need, right, to advocate for it. And
right, right. So true.
So where can people find you if they want to connect with you? They've heard you talking about this. They've got either questions or they just want to reach out for help. And you're based in Florida, right? So if anybody's looking for therapy, yes, too. So
yes. So I'm based in Florida. People can find me either on my website, thesteppingstonescounseling.com. They can also find me on Instagram at Steps Towards Wellness.
Great. Well, thank you so much for being with me.
Awesome. Thank you so much for having me. It was a pleasure.
You've been listening to Better Sex. Please visit our website, bettersexpodcast.com, for show notes and additional episodes.
And that's a wrap for today. I really hope you enjoyed the episode. If you are enjoying the podcast, if some of this material resonates with you and you would like to make a difference and make sure that this keeps coming out in the world once a week, ongoing, there are a couple things you could do to show your appreciation. The first would be to go to iTunes and rate and review the show. That really helps us be found by new listeners when you review the show on iTunes. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/iTunes. The other thing I want to invite you to consider is becoming a Patreon. For a small monthly pledge, you get some benefits. So for $2 a month, you get advance access to every single episode. For $5 a month, you get a chapter of my upcoming new book. And for $10 a month, I host quarterly get to know you and question and answer chats over the web, and you get invited to that. I would love to have your membership in that become part of the Better Sex family. You can find a link at bettersexpodcast.com/Patreon, which is P-A-T-R-E-O-N. Again, thanks for listening. I'm glad you're here. Feel free to comment, ask questions, get in touch. I'd love to hear from listeners. Thanks.